Unconventional hospitality indeed on a magic carpet, right? How fun would that be? Will you be in the spirit of prayer with me? Holy One, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable in your sight. Amen. I love being the hostess. I love to have my friends over for a dinner or a barbecue. I delight in having people that I enjoy and care about together in one place, especially our place. To be surrounded by good people, good music, good food, and a good atmosphere. I love the planning of what we'll eat, of coming up with inexpensive and attractive decorations, just imagining everyone having fun together. Then the actual event comes, and I am so concerned about the details. I don't want anyone's help unless they can read my mind and do it my way. I'm worried about the roast, if it's dried out. I'm worried about if there are enough hors d'oeuvres. I'm worried that no one's watching the movie that we all said we were going to watch together, or that they don't want to play the game that we all picked out. I'm worried. I'm distracted. And I just can't sit down and absorb the real-life version of the idea that I had dreamed. You can ask Dan sometime. I usually bounce around from room to room, making sure glasses and tummies are full, cleaning up clutter as we go. Might as well run the dishwasher now so that we can run it again before we go to bed. Every once in a while, someone will say, Angela, stop. Come and sit with us. And I'm always glad when they do, because it stops that what I call monkey chatter. That's from my psychology degree. That's an actual phrase, monkey chatter, that goes on in my brain, listing something else I could be doing to make someone happier or more comfortable. And I wonder if that was the tone that Jesus had with Martha. Not one of admonishment or scolding, but trying to get her attention, interrupting the flow of words and the train of thought that was really getting her nowhere. Martha, Martha, stop. This story about Mary and Martha is one of those passages that has been historically interpreted in such a way that it minimizes the possibilities of what discipleship and leadership can look like, especially for women. It has meant that we're expected to fit into one of those molds. We're either the ultimate homemaker and hostess, making sure that everyone is comfortable, never caring, always putting ourselves last, doing our duty to welcome our guests, or the submissive, quiet, listening learner, sitting at the feet of our male teacher, seen but not heard. But by pitting Mary and Martha against each other, some interpretations have also created a rift among women, implying that only one way of discipleship is needed, that one way is better. I like the version that Linda used, the English Standard Version, because it's actually very close to the Greek. Most or many translations use the word better. It says Mary has chosen the better part, which will not be taken away from her. But the Greek is actually similar to what Linda read. Mary has chosen the good portion. It isn't that Martha is doing something less than, or in all of her activity and her commotion. It's not that Jesus isn't appreciative of Martha's hospitality. What he's saying is that Martha has made a good choice for herself, And he's not going to let anyone take that choice away from her, which was totally unconventional for his time, that a woman would get to make her own choices and decide what was best for her. And Jesus takes it further because these women, Mary and Martha of Bethany, became leaders in the Jesus movement. In its early days, it was called the Way. And so you weren't Christians, you were followers of the Way. And Mary and Martha of Bethany were the first ones named the apostles to the apostles. They were leaders among leaders in the first century. I actually got goosebumps and I'm sweating. Not only does a woman, each woman, have a choice in how she will show her adoration to the Lord, each woman is invited to use her own gifts to be a disciple and then to lead. It's about freedom. Freedom of choice, freedom for women to be leaders. Did you know that Luke's gospel is the only one that records this interaction? And John is the only other one who even mentions Mary and Martha, and that's at the death of Lazarus. So it's really not even about them. It's more about Lazarus dying and Jesus showing who he is to the people who've gathered there. And so Luke doesn't even talk about Lazarus. He says Jesus came to Martha's home in Bethany, and her sister Mary was there. Martha was the head of her own household. Very unique. And so these sisters are named, and they are very noteworthy women, and they get to show us how much Jesus meant to them. Mary is remembered in Eastern Orthodoxy as one who received special revelations from God, and she was a missionary to France and a Eucharistic minister. So at a time in Europe when they were trying to shut women out, here was a woman who was serving communion. Martha, Martha, Martha. There's a medieval legend about Martha that she was a dragon tamer. Isn't that cool? I love that. But it just tells you something about their personalities, their gifts, and how people interpreted those gifts. It's about the freedom to be unique, to be who we are, who we've been created to be. We can be an active or a contemplative disciple, and we can learn to be both. And we can learn when to be each. Jesus knew his days were numbered when he was with Mary and Martha, and he wanted that quality time with them. He wasn't saying that either Mary or Martha had to be someone they weren't. And he wasn't going to let anyone else tell them that either. I once read a book called Having a Mary Heart in a Martha World. Have you read that? You can imagine what it's about, though. The author suggests that the world is very concerned with time and getting things done. Very concerned with seeing immediate results. About being concerned with what the other person is doing, staying ahead of the curve. Does that sound familiar? Yeah. But the true discipleship, the author says, is about spending time learning and listening, in study and in prayer. But there is danger in being only contemplative. It's kind of like sending out your thoughts and prayers, but not being willing to change anything in order to prevent acts of violence from happening again. It's like asking God to heal the planet, but not being willing to give up using plastic bags. But there's also a danger in only being active. Maybe you've felt some of that. We call it burnout. We can wear ourselves out if we don't take the time to refill our spiritual reservoirs. We can get so caught up in the doing that we miss the opportunities for deep connections with people. If we're always on the go, if we're always doing and never just being, we miss out on the meaning and the purpose of it all. We need a both and approach to discipleship. We need to be in touch with God. Oh, I have to bring somebody out to meet you. This is my John Wesley. When I talk about him, I make sure he always agrees with me. When we're in touch with God, John Wesley called that personal holiness. There's a whole section in your hymnal of hymns dedicated to personal holiness. But he said we also need to be willing to step out and do something, and that is social holiness. And in your hymnals, there's a whole section of hymns dedicated to social holiness. John and Charles Wesley were the first ones to organize hymnals not by alphabetical order of the names of the hymns, but by themes so that you could go through it. And if you needed assurance, there are hymns of assurance there, not insurance, assurance. If you needed, you know, some a lift up or you needed prayer, there are hymns of prayer, and they're all divided into those sections. We'll talk about that another time. But Wesley would say we are called to be active and contemplative throughout our lives. But he was a pretty unconventional fellow, too. Thanks to his mother, by the way. John Wesley was all about balance. Instead of imagining an either-or mentality when it comes to practicing faith, he was up on his Eastern Orthodoxy, and he believed that the true challenge came in embracing a both-and approach. After all, hospitality is about both preparing a lovely meal and accommodations, as well as spending time with your guests and leaving the dishes for the morning. There are times for doing and times for listening. There are times for practicing and times for learning. Instead of trying to be Mary or Martha, we need to be both for different reasons and at different times. And so you might have wondered why I brought in the story of Abraham and Sarah entertaining the strangers. Well, I want to commend it to you as another possibility for what unconventional hospitality might look like. Convention dictated that Abraham should offer these strangers. The law said you would welcome strangers into your home. Of course, he's before the law, but you get what I'm getting at. Convention said that you would offer them a little water and bread. In fact, that's what he tells them he's going to prepare for them, a little water and a morsel of bread. But what does he actually get them? Do you remember? A calf, so they get roast beef. They have curds and milk, which is like buttermilk. That's a little sweeter and sticks with you better than water, right? What else? There's one more thing. He tells Sarah to make cakes. Oh my gosh, I'd rather have cake than bread any day, right? Cakes of the finest flour. And that he brings this feast out before these strangers and says, sit under the tree. And he stays with them while they eat. One rabbi explained the meaning behind Abraham saying one thing and doing another. He said it was to illustrate that a righteous person doesn't say a lot, but does a lot. God told the Israelites that they were being blessed so that they might be a blessing to the nations. Abraham and Sarah lived that blessing before that law was given to them. When we are active in outreach, we are living that blessing too. Outreach can look like taking meals to shut-ins, but it can also be writing to your representatives and senators about an issue that is important to you. Outreach is about visiting the sick and those who are in prison, but it also looks like advocacy for patients and prisoners. Outreach can be both the Band-Aid and the cure, just like discipleship can be both private and communal, personal and social, just like hospitality can be about the preparation and presence in the moment. We need to feel that blessing, to come back to the well and be refreshed in order to continue blessing others. But we can't stay at the well, or we'll never get the chance to bless a world that is filled with many wells, with many people in many places. So let's forget about fitting into stereotypes. Let's forget about scapegoating those who do the discipleship thing a little differently than you or I might do. And let's start learning together, reading together, praying together. Let's start working together, giving together, visiting together, advocating together, reaching out together. Let's take our blessing and go out to be a blessing to the nations. Who cares what convention says? Let's show some unconventional hospitality. Amen.